Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and two special guests today, Jeremy Fried and Charlie Fisher. What is up, fellas? How are we doing?
We're doing great, Nick.
It's a great season so far. Great coming out of Thanksgiving with some awesome basketball action. Really excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're about 25% through the season, so ready to talk some more basketball.
I like how you guys started at the same exact moment when you introduced yourself. That was pretty good. We're on point. We're all on sync so far. Happy to have you both on the NBA Outlet, though.
And happy to have Charlie part of the OTG team, you know, just started with OTG. Also, Jeremy, not that long ago as well, stepping up to a bigger role. Really appreciate these guys and stepping up on the pod. And as always, check out the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But to get us started, we're going to go a little bit of a quick pace game. I'm going to give you two players, and you're telling me who's having a better season so far. So right off the bat, Kemba Walker and Dame Lillard.
Dame Lillard. I think Portland, people didn't know what to expect from them. And I think Dame Lillard might be the best point guard in the league that's not named Steph Curry. Kemba Walker, he's been, you know, absolutely on fire this year. But, you know, it's the start of the season. You know, we haven't seen, I think, the same caliber of play from him as we have for Dame Lillard. I got to go with Dame.
I got to go with Kemba on this one. You know, the 60-point performance, he's got less of a supporting cast than Damian Lillard does over in Portland without a C.J. McCollum by his side. If it weren't for Kemba Walker, the Hornets might only have one or two wins. It's a contract year for him especially, so I think he's got something to prove. I definitely got to go with Kemba Walker.
I'm going to go with Kemba Walker as well. Their numbers are really similar, but Kemba's averaging more points per game. He's shooting more efficient from the field and from deep. Obviously, as you just mentioned, Charlotte doesn't have necessarily the same supporting cast as he has out in Portland with C.J. McCollum as his number two. So I'm going to say Kemba Walker has also had, you know, a 60-point game also this season already.
Any rebuttal from you, Jeremy?
You know, I think that Kemba has obviously played very well. But if you're asking me which one's a better player in general, I would take Dame Lillard before I would take Kemba Walker. I mean, there are a few high points in Kemba's season that are a little higher perhaps than, you know, Dame's high points. But that doesn't say to me that he's a better player at this point. I just think that, he's had some good outings. And just because Dame has by his side and Kemba Walker has Malik Monk doesn't mean that Kemba Walker is suddenly a better player.
All right, moving on to our next selection. Better season so far, LeBron James or Kevin Durant?
Oh, it's Kevin Durant. LeBron, you know, in a new situation, it's a little tougher. But, I mean, I think outside, you know, Kevin Durant's very well-publicized blow-up with Draymond Green, that he has had a better season thus far. He leads the league in minutes played. He leads the league in field goal attempts. He has been absolutely the engine for this team, especially with Steph Curry missing some time. Kevin Durant has been maybe the best player in the league thus far with Steph on the sideline. Got to go with Kevin Durant.
This might be the Laker bias in me, but I've got to go ahead and pick up on LeBron for this one. He's pretty much taken the Lakers, who were a bottom feeder last year, all the way up to at least a contention in the playoff picture. He has his games here and there where LaCoste steps up, but Golden State lost three or four games. Durant has had Klay Thompson by his side throughout the whole season. They still have choked away a few games. So I got to give this one to LeBron just because of the way he's elevated the Lakers. They're not perfect right now, but from where they were last year, he's sort of taken them up a few notches.
God, this is a tough one. I feel like I'm on Charlie's side so far. I'm leaning with LeBron James as well. Only because, you know, there was this little stretch that just happened with the Warriors where even when Durant was playing well, this team just was struggling to win basketball games, even though the Lakers too have been a roller coaster up and down early. I just feel like LeBron's had more of an impact, I guess. But, I mean, Kevin Durant's been tremendous. He had 49 points, just the other night again. This one's really close, but I'm going to give the edge to LeBron.
I mean, I love LeBron, as I have to rebut, you know, people ganging up on me.
I'm going to have to jump in here now.
You know, I mean, I'm a Cavs fan at heart, so I love LeBron. But for the both of these first two categories, the prime argument has been, this guy has a lesser team around him. And the question is, who has played better this year? And Kevin Durant, I think, has played better than LeBron. I mean, Kevin Durant, 29 points, you know, better part of 8 rebounds, 6 assists a game. He is doing it all on the court. Obviously, I mean, you're talking about, you know, in some ways 1A and 1B in terms of the best, you know, players in the league. Wrong, but I think that, you know, the Kevin Durant has been better than LeBron, who, you know, turns it on and off. And, you know, if you look at last night's game against the Nuggets, you know, they just kind of packed it in and said, all right, I guess we're taking an L here. And he had, you know, 14 points, like 4 rebounds, 4 assists, something like that. I mean, he had a terrible game, you know, especially on the heels of that game. I'm not going to come out here and, you know, stand for LeBron.
I think the major argument would be the effort, because you've seen LeBron coast and then missing the late game free throws. KD's been a little bit more consistent. But next up in our matchup, Paul George versus Jimmy Butler.
Well, that's a tough one.
It's been an argument for a while. A lot of these have been arguments for more than this season, so it's always interesting to kind of touch on where they're at right now.
For sure. I guess I'll go with Paul George. I mean, I have slammed both Paul George and Jimmy Butler both on OTG airwaves at this point in the season already. I think I got to go with Paul George just because he hasn't, like, intentionally torpedoed a team yet thus far in 2018.
Oh, well, maybe this season. Okay.
In this season.
Okay.
You know, it's a tough one because, you know, I still have this awful taste in my mouth from a game earlier in the season where Russell Westbrook couldn't, you know, hit the ocean if he was falling out of a boat. And Paul George was like, why don't you try again? And I really, really was not happy with the Paul effort in terms of, you know, being a star and taking control of a team. But, you know, Jimmy Butler, just what he did to Minnesota, it'll take more than a couple of games in Philly to wipe that out of my mouth too.
I have to agree with Jeremy on this one. I mean, Paul George is putting up career high in points per game, steals per game, rebounds. I do got to also agree that he does defer a little bit too much to Westbrook. But I think that's sort of always been his personality. Like when he thrived with the Pacers, they had sort of like a team-oriented environment. He had Danny Granger to sort of help him out a little bit. If he were to step up and be more aggressive, I think he could be a top 7 or 8 player in this league. But he just defers too much, especially to Westbrook. But right now he's out playing Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler has been on and off the court. He had the drama with Minnesota. I just don't – he has to put it together for a few more months for me to think that he's sort of past Paul George at this point in the season.
All right, so I'm going to be the one guy on Jimmy Butler's side. I'm going with Jimmy Butler. I mean, I'm a big Paul George fan, which Nick knows, and you guys are going to know now. yeah, he's averaging a career high in points. He's also shooting a career worst from the field. Well, aside from the 6 games he played after breaking his leg. He's not shooting that good from 3. He's just been really inconsistent offensively. Obviously, on the defensive end of the ball, he's phenomenal. You know, he has 2.3 steals per game.
Leads the league in steals.
Does he even steal? I knew he was close. I didn't want to speak out of my, you know, put my foot in my mouth. And so obviously he's good on that end of the floor. And Jimmy Butler, I mean, I just think right now he's an all-around more complete player. I mean, he's shooting very efficient from both 3 and the field. I mean, ridiculous so far with Philly, so I'm not even going to bring up those numbers. It's like 51 and 55 splits, which are crazy. I don't know. I like the fact that Jimmy Butler kind of has that I'm the man mentality, which, as you mentioned, Jeremy, you know, Paul George really – likes to be the number 2. I just don't, at this point in his career, he's never going to be that guy who takes charge. And you mentioned that game against with OKC earlier in the year where he just kept letting Westbrook go 4 for 20 from the field without any sense of urgency from himself to try and get himself going. And that's just like the difference in mentality. So for me, between the mentality and just the all-around game as of right now, I think Jimmy Butler has a slight edge.
Yeah, and he also has 2 game winners under his belt with Philly. You know, Paul George Wood has never
had one.
Yeah, he's never had one. Obviously, Butler is a little bit more clutch. But, you know, obviously there's the off-the-court stuff, the locker room stuff. We'll see how that kind of works out in Philly.
Just to say one thing in support of Paul George, I saw a Gatorade commercial where he hit a game winner. Okay, so
if you watch that shot,
one,
though.
At least one.
If you watch that shot, though, the ball trajectory kind of off. Didn't look like he was going to make it to the rim, and somehow it did.
Who knows? CGI? No. Now 2 non-All-Star players. This is a little Laker tie for Charlie. JaVale McGee versus Brook Lopez.
Earlier in the season, I would have said JaVale McGee, but does, you know, especially when he's not going 0-for-12 from three, is really stretching the floor for Milwaukee. I think a huge part of the success of that team has to do with Brook Lopez's willingness to gun from downtown and to spread things out and make it so, you know, you can't just wall Giannis from, you know, making his way to the rim where he has been, I think, in, you know, historically excellent, you know, in terms of his, you know, close to the back basket success rate. So he has been such a difference maker in terms of what he's done to the team. I mean, if you set him side by side, you might not think that the actual stats were, you know, were so impressive. I mean, they may or may not reflect Lopez, you know, being a better player than JaVale McGee. But I think in terms of what he has brought to that team and the different dimension that he has been a greater impact on Milwaukee than JaVale McGee has been on the Lakers.
It hurts me to say this, but I have to agree with Jeremy here, because Brook Lopez has completely changed Milwaukee's offense. Like, if you have, when you have a 7-1 center out there, they can go five out, spread the entire floor, and that just opens up lanes all over the place for Giannis, for Chris Middleton. JaVale McGee's had an amazing year, at one point leading the league in blocks at almost four a game. But I think he's sort of tapered off a little bit the past few games, especially with Tyson Chandler coming in and soaking up minutes from him. But Brook Lopez, even if he's not hitting the shots, just his presence out there, he's able to do things for Milwaukee that if they would have had it last year against the Boston Celtics, they probably would have won that series in maybe sixth or that seventh game.
Man, this is a tough one. But this is going to be the first time we all agree. I'm going to go with Brook Lopez as well. I've been a big fan of the Milwaukee Bucks heading into the year, and now obviously they're off to a hot start. So I'm extremely happy that everything has come together for them so quickly. Brook Lopez, you guys have mentioned, I mean, he's been crucial to the floor spacing on that team. Although I think the stats, I think Jeremy mentioned, you know, they may lean in favor of JaVale McGee. I mean, he's averaging a ridiculous like 2.9 blocks per game. He just had 7 the other day against Orlando. So I mean, he's been extremely good for the Lakers, better than I expected. But I think impact wise, Brook Lopez has been more impactful.
Yeah, I mean, I had a chance to take a little look at it. And, you know, just, you know, if you like player A, player B, side by side, points, rebounds, blocks, and things like that, JaVale looks like a more impactful center, as you said. You know, been very good with the blocks. He's averaging, I think it's like a 13-6 is what it looks to be there. And those represent some of the best, you know, numbers of his career for some time. And then, you know, Brook Lopez, about 11.5 points, surprisingly not even 4 rebounds a game. You know, the better part of 2 blocks, but, you know, the non-traditional center set that you look down at, he's taking almost 7 threes a game, and he's hitting 2.5 of them. He's shooting 37% from the field from 3, and he's shooting a lot of them. And that is what, you know, that's the dimension that he brings to that offense. And that's, I think, why we all agree that his impact has been so great on that Milwaukee Bucks team.
Do you have the number, Jeremy? Is he shooting the second most threes on the Bucks still, behind only Middleton? Do you have that or no?
Let's see. Not right in front of me.
I have it. Yeah, he's shooting. Yeah, he's Middleton has the most 3 attempts per game on the Bucks, and Brook Lopez is second, and he's shooting like a shot and a half more than Eric Bledsoe. That's crazy.
Floor spacing is everything, like you guys said. Really has helped Antetokounmpo take another stride. And we'll talk a little Bucks later. Talking another big men, Anthony Davis versus Joel Embiid so far this year.
Oh God,
these have been some killers, Nick. Let's go with Joel Embiid. I don't know that I necessarily believe that, but Joel Embiid, I mean, he's taken a leap is the thing. Joel Embiid has taken another leap. I mean, he was a great center last year, but he's been even better this year. And not that, you know, Anthony Davis hasn't been, but there's a lot of craziness going on, you know, with Philly. You know, the Fultz situation has been a real distraction. Obviously, there was a lot of, you know, will they, won't they, you know, when it comes to getting Jimmy Butler. And then, you know, you look at Joel Embiid, you know, the training wheels have come off. He doesn't have the minutes restrictions. He started and played in every game. It's 35 minutes a game. And he's, you know, averaging 28 points. He's pulling down 13 rebounds. He's still playmaking, 3.5 assists. You know, 2 blocks a game. I mean, there is nothing that Joel Embiid is not doing for Philly from the center position. And, you know, I in the same way as I have this negativity towards, you know, the me firstness. You know, when Anthony Davis comes out and says, you know, unless I play perfectly, we don't stand a chance. I mean, that's not leadership to me. That's mm-hmm. you know, looking for a reason to, you know, get out of town. And, you know, I think that Joel Embiid has as much as, you know, I think he was first team All NBA last year. Center mm-hmm. can make a leap. He has absolutely done it this year.
It's close, but I got to agree with Jeremy on this one. With Joel Embiid, he's just been, when he's on the floor for Philadelphia, they're just a completely different animal. He's probably leading defensive player of the year candidate, I would say, right now. His rebounds are up, like Jeremy, 13 rebounds a game. All the stats are there. Anthony Davis, he's doing what he's doing, but it just doesn't seem like he's taken another step from last year. Like Joel Embiid, you can tell he's taken another step. And I don't know if Anthony Davis has sort of taken that next step, like the step that I see Giannis has taken from last season to this season, where, you know, they're coming in, they're the bona fide superstar, they're taking everything over. Anthony Davis does that, but I don't know if he's done it to the level that Joel Embiid from last season to this season.
I'm glad I went last because I've just been looking at stats. I mean, they're so goddamn close.
So close.
In everything, like even the advanced metrics, the per 100 possessions. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking like it's extremely close. I mean, we're talking about who took a bigger leap going into this season than it's Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. Obviously, across the board, he's gotten a lot better. But I'm going to still give the slight edge to Anthony Davis. And I don't really have anything to back that up. Besides, I just think he may be more impactful. I mean, his offensive rating is at an all-time high for the last 4 years. Defensive rating slightly higher. He's got a – I mean, their win shares are 0.1 off. Anthony Davis has a 4-point edge in the box, the plus box minus. I'm going to give the slightest to Anthony Davis, but, I mean, this can really go any way. And, obviously, Anthony Davis has missed some time this year already, which I think kind of maybe pushes – Joel Embiid slightly ahead because he hasn't been hurt, which has obviously been the biggest question for him. But I'm missing Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it is important to point out AD has been dealing with, I believe, an elbow injury, and it's been lingering, but I think Embiid has probably been better and more consistent this year. On to the next matchup, Nikola Vucevic and Montrezl Harrell.
God damn.
I mean, I think if you're asking, you know, who has a more impressive stat line, you got to go with Vucevic. But if you are, you know, talking about, you know, I mean, the Clippers, and we're going to talk about the Clippers, I think, a little more later, you know, they have been such a surprise team, and Harrell has been such a huge piece of that, that I think Harrell might take. I mean, he's coming off the bench. You know, the better part of 16 points, 7.5 rebounds a game. You know, he's shooting a ridiculous percentage. All of it, you know, that close basket, dirty work. Vucevic has been an offensive force. Been better, but they haven't been good. And in the same, you know, breath, I mean, the Clippers, I mean, I think the Clippers have the best record in the West right now. And if you, you know, ask who really thought was going to be the case, you know, at this point in the season, you'd find a lot of people lying to your face. So, I mean, as far as like this point of the year, Vucevic has been a great success story for the Magic, and the Magic have been a lot better. But the Clippers have been, and I don't think they're there without Harrell doing what he's been doing.
Yep, I agree with Jeremy on this one. If you look at Vucic's numbers outside of dominating the Lakers, he's pretty much – he's had 3 30-point games so far this season. Two of them have been against the Lakers, and we all know how terrible the Laker defense can be at times. But Harrell has really, really stepped up for the Clippers. Tobias Harris has a lot to do with that as well, which takes a little pressure off Harrell. But the fact that he can come in, he can get, I think it's like 17 points a game. He gives him full energy. He reminds me of what the Denver Nuggets wanted Kenneth Faried to be. He sort of developed that role for them, and he's had probably the better season by a small margin, I would say.
Oh, brother. It's funny because both these teams are obviously having a lot of team success, which helps both these guys out. I mean, I think I'm more surprised by Montrezl Harrell's impact and numbers to this point. But I'm gonna go with Vucevic. I said his name right. Holy shit, that's a big deal. I'm terrible with names, Jeremy and Charlie, just so you guys know. Like, terrible. Like, top five, worst of all time. Can't say any European name for the life of me. But I'm going to give it to Vucevic. I think he's been – I don't know. It's funny with this Phoenix team, Orlando team, because, you know, they haven't had a point guard. So I think that's kind of affected the use of the centers and how Vucevic has been used prior. And I just think Orlando's taken a bigger jump than I expected. I thought the Clippers would be competitive. I didn't really think the Magic were going to be competitive, and Vucevic has been a big part of that.
Yeah, both guys having great seasons, and, you know, we'll talk about both teams in a little bit. Last one to end it, Kyle Lowry versus Kyrie Irving.
Let's go with Kyle Lowry. And this is not, you know, if you were about to, you know, pick up some teams on the playground, you know, for some, you know, pickup, you know, who would you, you know, take first? I think there you'd probably take Kyrie. But, I mean, this is a team game. So I'm not going to, you know, fall in love with a Kyrie stat line or, you know, talk about, you know, how good his handle is. The Toronto Raptors have been the best team in basketball, I would say, up to this point. And last night, you know, following all the action on NBA TV, they were talking about they've had the easiest schedule. They haven't had any, they've only had like two back-to-backs thus far and, you know, et cetera. But, you know, good teams take care of their business. And they've absolutely done that. They've also had some very high-profile games, including ones with the Celtics. You know, the Raptors are not a mirage. They are playing tremendously well. And Kyle Lowry is a huge reason for that. Is he still leading the league in assists?
Yes,
I believe so.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, it's like he's still having a career high for assists by a large margin right now.
Yeah, it's like a four assist jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he has been, I think, playing at a really high level, you know, for him and in general. And, you know, of course, Kawhi Leonard has not played in every game. So, you know, he's had to run that show for a number of nights without, you know, his, you know, main running mate and, you know, like the best player on the team. And still they're having the success they're having. So I'm going to give it to Kyle Lowry for that. And I don't think that makes him necessarily, as I said, a better player, you know, in a vacuum. But up to this point in the season, he's certainly meant more to his team than Kyrie's meant to the Celtics, I would say.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely Kyle Lowry. His numbers won't blow you off the page, but his career high in 10 assists a game, that's the highest he's had. His previous career high was 7.4 per game, you know, 15 points. They don't really blow you away, but if you watch the games, he makes a huge impact. He directs the offense. Defensively, he makes the right rotations. He's the one communicating. He sort of plays the Kevin Garnett role defensively that he played back in the Boston Celtics days, where he's not really the last line of defense, but he's the one that orchestrates the defense. He makes all the right switches. He initiates the offense. He's invaluable to them, even if you don't look at the stat sheet. So I would go Kyle Lowry, especially with how underperforming the Boston Celtics have been this year.
I'm going with Kyle Lowry. I mean, Kyrie Irving had that slow start, which I've mentioned a lot of times on this podcast, when he had the awesome afro. And obviously he's been killing it since then, but I just think Kyle Lowry has more of an impact on the roster. He's definitely become a vocal and just a leader of this team. Watching the Raptors on several occasions this year, you know, he's the first guy off the bench to congratulate somebody. He's constantly talking to when he's on the bench. Maybe he's done this all along. I don't think I've watched a ton of Raptors games in the past, but it just feels like he's more embraced this role since DeRozan's gone. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you guys have mentioned the stats are solid. Obviously, they don't blow you away, but you know his impact is felt out there, especially on the defensive end. And, of course, the 10.2 assists. You know, this is the best version of a pass-first Kyle Lowry we've ever seen.
Now on to our actual topics for today, starting with the Milwaukee Bucks. Are the Bucks a real threat to win the Eastern Conference?
I think they absolutely are. You know, having a legitimate NBA coach apparently has a big impact on the success of your team.
What a surprise.
And a big surprise. And, you know, it's just a team that is, I think, now that they're being properly utilized, very well constructed for the modern NBA. And, you know, if the Eastern Conference playoffs and the way it shook down last year are any indication, you need a transcendent player to at least, you know, get out of this conference. And they have that in Giannis Antetokounmpo. He has absolutely made a leap this year. You know, talking about people making a leap. you know, 27 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists. He obviously has not figured it out from downtown just yet. If he ever does, then really watch out, league. But he is a fantastic player, and he has a good supporting cast. And Chris Middleton is not quite second superstar good, but very close to it, and does the things that his team needs in terms of being so prolific from downtown. Obviously, he's cooled off a little bit from his supernova start, but still hitting 41% from the field in those 7.5 threes a game that we talked about before that he's shooting. Eric Bledsoe has been a very good piece of that team. Malcolm Brogdon. Brooke Lopez obviously has gotten plenty of our attention thus far. So this is a team that has a very good, very consistent starting five. And, you know, has you know, really come to play. I mean, they're second in the East right now. They're 14-6. And, you know, once you get to the playoffs, we saw it last year, you know, with a similarly good Raptors team, you know, once they ran into that, you know, single star that they couldn't stop, you know, they got wiped out. So, you know, there are good teams in the East, but it's still a superstar-driven league. Bucks can absolutely make their way to the finals.
I agree with Jeremy. I think they have the ability to make it there because anything can happen in a 7-game series, but I don't think they will. I love Chris Middleton. I think he's a great second option for Milwaukee, but I think they just need a bigger piece to put around Giannis, especially if his 3-point shot can't improve at all. Once you get to the playoffs, the game slows down. We saw it last year, like the Boston Celtics, they'll just put up a wall with 2 or 3 players to block Giannis from attacking the basket. And at that point, it's up to the 3-point shooters to sort of bail them out. They have Ilyasova this year. They have Brooke Lopez. Chris Middleton's been playing well. Eric Bledsoe's been knocking it down. I think they can do it just because of the anything can happen, like I said, but I don't think they will just because I feel like Giannis needs to have a little bit more of a threat from the outside to sort of open up the floor come playoff time.
So the question is, will they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, are they a real threat to win the Eastern Conference?
I'm going to say I'm going with yes. I actually have them in prediction before the season and being in the Eastern Conference finals. I think this team has the pieces. I think they still might make another move. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and just added another shooter. And like you guys have both mentioned, you know, the starting five has been producing between Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez has been a fine addition. Malcolm Brogdon being healthy, last year only played in 41 games. Him being healthy so far this year has been a huge impact. Great defender. Antetokounmpo having this much room to operate is ridiculous. This is the number one offensive rating team in the league, number 4 in defensive rating, I believe. Mm-hmm. They're playing with, or 5th in defensive rating, they're 4th in pace. This is a team that I think at this point in time, they can only get better, I think. You know, this them playing this well with a new head coach and a new system to the start of the season, to me just means once they start getting the ball moving farther and farther into the year, they should only get better or at least solidify what they got. And obviously, like Pat Connaughton off the bench, Ersan Ilyasova, Tony Snell, all those guys have had a better year from last season. I like the rookie Dante Vincenzo. I think he'll get better as he gets more playing time. So I think this is a serious team that can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm not really worried about the 3-point shooting when it comes playoff time. You know, as long as, you know, Eric Bledsoe doesn't get shook again by a scary Terry and, you know, Middleton last year against Boston shot, I think like 55 or 57% from 3 that entire series. He was ridiculous. And the role players step up and, you know, Brooke Lopez keeps hitting, you know, what do you have, 9 threes that one night. I really like this team to be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Now, what would you guys say is the biggest reason for the Bucks' success so far this year? Giannis's next level, or Coach Bud coming in, or the new additions they made to space the floor?
Well, I think that, you know, 2 and 3 are working hand in hand. You know, Coach Bud coming in and new additions to space the floor. I think that, you know, certain roster decisions were made with, you know, the understanding in mind that this is the system that he runs and this is what he requires for that system to be successful. So I think those, you know, two are clearly the point. I don't think that anyone was tremendously surprised that Giannis would continue to improve. You know, that's what he has done thus far in his career. He's a hard worker. He, you know, identifies weaknesses. He gets better. You know, it is not surprising, you know, that he has, you know, yet again. You know, the magnitude with which he's improved himself, maybe, you know, that might surprise some people, but that he's better is not tremendously, you know, shocking. It's that he's in a system now that suits him so well, and really plays to his strengths in terms of creating more space for him, creating more opportunities for him, to get to the rim unimpeded. Obviously, as was mentioned, the situation can change in the playoffs, but now they are much better equipped to deal with that. And as well, different things happen when you're playing, at home versus on the road. At this point, the road to the finals could very well go through Milwaukee. They are, not far off from the best record in the league. So if they're playing, at the Fiserv Forum in Game 7 instead of having to go to Boston for that, then, a very different thing can turn out, when all is said and done.
I think it's a mixture of a little bit of everything that you mentioned, Jeremy, but I'd have to give the edge to Coach Bud. Right now, Milwaukee's second in the league in assists. 27 per game, 27.2, just right behind Golden State, who's at 27.9. So the new system he's implemented has sort of taken them up to another level. And we saw what he did with that Atlanta Hawks team, I believe it was 2015, 2016, where if they hadn't ran into a LeBron freight train, then they might have gone to the NBA Finals. So Coach Bud, also a Greg Popovich protege, I think him coming in, changing the culture is the biggest impact, but also bringing in the new personnel has sort of helped them take that next leap, and just getting Jason Kidd out of there took them on the right path.
Yeah, I think, like Jeremy said, 2 and 3 are really close together. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Budenholzer's system gets put in place so quickly without these pieces. But I'm going to give the edge to Budenholzer. Like Charlie just mentioned, they actually have a head coach now. Jason mm-hmm. Kidd, as we know, is probably not going to have a head coaching job anytime soon. And Budenholzer, he's put this offense and defense into place. We knew how talented this team could be on defense because of their length, and they're mm-hmm. finally utilizing that kind of length. And then offensively, the floor spacing is what sticks out the most. The fact that Antetokounmpo gets an entire lane to himself to do whatever he wishes and drive and have these crazy dunks where he's just underneath the basket and just throws his arm up and can throw it down. I'm going to give the edge to Budenholzer.
Now, Corey, you hinted at this before. Do you guys think that the Bucks should make one more move to take their game to another level and really have a chance to possibly even compete with Golden State in the finals?
I think that he should. I've been in the trade machine, and I've, looked for matches for them in terms of, what they could do. Unfortunately, they had really gone crazy that summer of the cap spike and have some money tied up in some not particularly, good places. As I said, as a Cavs fan, I still have a soft spot in my heart for, Matthew Dellavedova, but he does not earn his keep with that salary. And there are a few people for whom that's true. John Henson was signed to a salary that he is not making back. Tony Snell, the same is true for. So they have a lot of money tied up in some places that it's going to be tough to get a proper return on it. But you got to go for these things. Windows close so quickly in the NBA, and people think, look at this team. This team's going to be set up forever. I think a lot of people thought when, that Oklahoma City Thunder team with Durant and Westbrook and Harden broke through, a year before or 2 years before anybody thought they would, that, the road would go to, through Oklahoma City for, years on end. And that turned out to be the only year that team made the finals. So if you have a chance where you can really look at it and say, we could actually win this year, don't hope that you'll be in a similar position next year, make a move and go for it, because that's a championship is something that it doesn't matter what happens in the aftermath. Again, as a Cavs fan, we had 2016. All of the stuff that's going on right now, it's not optimal, but we have a championship. We won, so that's fine. You don't want to let that window of opportunity close.
I agree with that. I'm not sure what move they can make because, like Jeremy said, they have a lot of salary tied up. John Henson's getting $11 million. Tony Snell's getting $10 million. Dellavedova's $9 million. But with Chris Middleton, I believe he's coming up on free agency this year. I would just go all in on this season. Maybe they can find a way to move Dellavedova for a shooter, like a Kyle Korver type player. But if they can get another shooter out there, maybe J.R. Smith, drawing a blank right now on shooters that are available. But I would definitely go in if I was Milwaukee. Just go all in on this season. Even if you have to overpay for somebody, they're so close to being right there to the NBA Finals, like that tier level. But they just need one more piece. I don't know if Eric Bledsoe is their point guard of the future, so maybe if they can get something for him, but I feel like they have to make a move to make that next step.
Like Jeremy mentioned, you never know how long your window is. For example, Houston Rockets. It seriously feels like their window was just last season. They mm-hmm. had 1 year. Everything came together last year. It kind of feels like that was it. So if you have an opportunity to possibly win a championship, you go for it. Now, I wouldn't jeopardize, you know, my future by getting rid of any major pieces in like Brogdon or Middleton. I'd be open to possibly trading Eric Bledsoe. Hopefully, maybe trying to get rid of one of these contracts in Dellavedova or Tony Snell or Henson, in which you guys mentioned. I'm not really sure either what player they could target or who even would be the ideal guy for them to target. But I think if you have an opportunity to add talent that can better your roster and give you a better chance of winning, especially when you have one of the top five best players in the league, I think you go for it.
I do want to let you all know that Tony Snell and Matthew Dellavedova can be traded for J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. I don't know that that does anything for anybody, but it could happen.
Something to keep an eye on. Obviously, trades are going to be starting to pick up when we get into December. Moving on from the Bucks now, talking about another Eastern Conference team, the Orlando Magic, 10-11, you know, off to somewhat of a hot start. What are your thoughts on Orlando so far? Are they as good as they've played, or are they going to kind of sink down like they did last season?
It's tough with them. They have a bunch of pieces. I do not think that they all fit together. You know, Vucevic has been obviously great. It's his best season thus far. But then you have, you know, Aaron Gordon. Is Aaron Gordon, you know, ever going to be more than he is? I mean, they used to have, you know, Tobias Harris, who we'll touch upon shortly. But, you know, would they be a better team with Tobias Harris than Aaron Gordon? One could very safely say yes. But they, you know, put their stock with, you know, Aaron Gordon and his pogo stick legs. Is that a good move? Is that a bad move? You know, Evan Fournier, I think, is playing very well. But, you know, at this juncture, I think he is what he is. And they're giving, you know, all kinds of minutes to a lot of people that you've heard of, you know, Terrence Ross, DJ Augustin, you know, but then, you know, their future is really tied up in people more like, you know, Jonathan Isaac and, you know, Mo Bamba, and, you know, they're playing, I guess, decently well for, you know, young players, you know, still new to the league. But they're going to have to make a decision, you know, on what they want to be. And I don't think that a core of Vucevic and Gordon and, you know, Evan Fournier is something that's going to really make waves. I mean, in what, like the Southeast Division, let alone the Eastern Conference, let alone the NBA. You know, as I was saying before, when we were discussing Vucevic versus, you know, Montrezl Harrell, Orlando is better than we thought they would be probably, but that doesn't mean that they're good. You know, 10-11, you know, they've been so bad that 10-11, it's like, oh man, aren't the Magic great this year? They're 10-11 so far. But that's not good. You know, that's like the definition of mediocre. So they're better, yes, but I mean, I would make, you know, trades to you know, blow that team up some more and continue to work around, you know, the players that they think are going to be the future. And, you know, this mix of things is, I think, interesting perhaps, but ultimately not, you know, the future of success in Orlando.
Yeah, I think Orlando should just go ahead and blow it up. 10-11, I don't see them getting much better than that. Like with the current core, they'll probably be a 500 team for the remainder of this season, next year, the years following that. Vucevic has a really high stock right now. I'd say go ahead and get what you can for him. Bamba has shown potential defensively. I'm not sure about Jonathan Isaac. Aaron Gordon is still up in the air, but he's only 23 years old. But they're not going to go anywhere with DJ Augustin as their starting point guard. That's just not going to happen. So I would say blow it up, get what you can for Vucevic. Hopefully Gordon, Bamba, or Isaac can turn into something legitimate. Otherwise, they're going to be sort of hovering around mediocrity for the next 3-4 years.
So last season, this Orlando Magic team, obviously different pieces, they started 8-4, and they finished with just 25 wins. And that was a hot start. I remember them being top of the Eastern Conference at some point in time. This year, they're 10-11. I don't see them getting better. I see them probably getting worse. I do think this is a team, as Charlie just mentioned in saying blow it up, that probably does blow it up. I wouldn't be surprised if guys like Terrence Ross, DJ Augustin, Jonathan Simmons, If those guys are dealt, obviously Simmons is having a dreadful shooting year, but there's somebody who would like his tenacity on defense. Evan Fournier, that's been a guy who's been surrounded by several trade rumors in the past couple of years. Wouldn't be shocked to see him moved. Another guy who's kind of struggling shooting-wise on splits of 41-28 and only 74 from the free throw line. You know, and as Jeremy mentioned, Tobias Harris probably would have been a better fit as like a small ball forward than Aaron Gordon. Not that Aaron Gordon's been bad, but I just don't see anything truly special about him besides the fact that I think he could be like a great value Blake Griffin at some point in his career, minus the playmaking. But this sounds and looks like a team that at some point in time is going to have a lot of players that teams that want to take the next step will come, you know, knocking.
Which players do you guys think will get them the most assets? Because it seems like everybody thinks they should blow it up. Which players should they look to move, you know, right away and try to get some assets? And should their focus be getting, you know, draft picks, or should be getting a young point guard for the future? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know what they'll really do with draft picks. It's not like they're going to get, you know, like a lottery pick, I think, really, for any of these, unless it's trading a very recent lottery pick. I mean, maybe, you know, Jonathan Isaac or, you know, Mo Bamba could bring back a top 10 pick, but, you know, they're recent top 10 picks. I mean, why would they do that? Unless for some reason they thought that, you know, those players had no future. I think, you know, the problem is, and not that I would equate Orlando to what, you know, Philly was doing with the process, but, you know, they're best players are some of the same positions. I mean, Mo Bamba, obviously a center. But Jonathan Isaac, I mean, he's really a four or five in the modern NBA. Aaron Gordon, I mean, I think really the thing about Aaron Gordon is that Aaron Gordon might make the most sense as a five with the, you know, the way that pace has you know, gone and with as athletic as he is and, you know, the way that other people are doing things. I mean, we've talked so much about Brook Lopez. You know, Aaron Gordon doesn't need to bang down low with Brook Lopez. He needs to chase him around a three-point arc. So I think that, you know, they have this positional redundancy that is really hurting them because they can't, you know, actually put out a lineup that's going to be most successful. And as much as Vucevic has been great, you know, who really wants that kind of traditional center? I mean, he's not a defensive stalwart. He's a really good offensive force. But having, you know, kind of, you know, big, meaty, offensively talented centers, I mean, there are very few teams, you know, you can kind of like list them off who have seen, you know, success with that. And that's because, you know, other things are going on. You know, Denver has that in, you know, Nikola Jokic, and not that Vucevic is as good as Jokic, but, you know, he's closer to him than he is to, you know, other options, maybe like, you know, Yusuf Nurkic in Portland, but he has such a great backcourt there. I mean, what team is out there that thinks, you know, Nikola Vucevic is really going to make the difference for us? I mean, I think he is the NBA of yesteryear, not the NBA of the future. So they have some real interesting and tough decisions to make. I don't know that they have so many people that other teams look at and say, this is the solution to what we need to advance our playoff hopes. It's a tough spot for Orlando.
Yeah, I would say Vucevic is their best bet to get a big haul, maybe a package around Vucevic and Terrence Ross or Evan Fournier. They can't really get rid of Augustine because that's pretty much their only point guard on roster right now that's worth a damn. Ideally, I don't know how it would work, but I think Vucevic could work really well with Popovic. I know Aldridge, Vucevic front court is a little, it's kind of a defensive liability, but a core of Vucevic, Aldridge, and DeMar DeRozan could definitely give a lot of the Western Conference teams a run for their money. It just depends on what they'd have to give up to get him. Outside of that, I, like Jeremy said, I don't see a lot of teams banging on Orlando's door looking to throw packages together for Vucevic. He's their best asset right now, but I don't know exactly what they could get for him that could help them long term.
Yeah, I think the guys you're looking at them dealing are going to be those smaller guys, you know, Ross, Augustine, Simmons, and maybe Fournier just because he has the shooting ability. I agree with you guys. I don't think there's a lot of teams who want Vucevic at this point in time. A guy like him on any team that's trying to contend just doesn't make a lot of sense. He's kind of a throwback center in a lot of ways. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. And like you also mentioned, Jeremy, it's not like they're going to get a high lottery draft pick for any of these guys, likely, unless it's like an Aaron Gordon they decide to move, which they just, you know, locked them up long term. That's probably not going to happen. They're going to be likely just looking to get some kind of young players for some of these older guys.
Yeah, and it just, I mean, you know, back to this, you know, positional redundancy. You look at, they took Mobamba at 6, and at 8. Okay, like I can promise you that Orlando would be very excited to have, you know, Colin Sexton representing, you know, their point guard situation in the future. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's been great for the Clippers, you know, but instead, you know, they beef up a front line that's already, you know, overstocked. You know, the decision, you know, is not top notch here. You know, it's just going to be, you know, tough for them to find their way forward. I mean, I know that, you know, they you know, brought Hammond in, and Hammond built the Bucks up, and so, you know, he is not a incompetent you know, evaluator of talent, but, you know, they need to do something to, you know, of, you know, those draft picks, you know, of throughout the roster a little bit better than what they're doing right now, which is just slamming that front court in a way that is opposite the trends of what the NBA is doing right now.
Yeah, definitely need to find a way to balance that roster. And like you said, moving forward, it's going to be something to keep an eye on, what they do with these players, what they can get back, if they're looking for young players or maybe the late first-round picks. Moving over to the Western Conference, the team we touched on a little bit, the Clippers, 13-6, first in the West. You know, they've been probably one of the most surprising teams in the league. What has been your thoughts on them?
Well, they, as good as they have been, they are, in my eyes, like the Milwaukee in terms of what they can actually hope for in the long run. While they do have, you know, some players playing very well, Tobias Harris having, you know, Gallinari coming back, you know, reminding everybody of, you know, why he was, you know, so highly prized, why he could be the centerpiece of a package that would go for. He's washed now. Carmelo Anthony, Lou Williams, great off the bench. We've obviously had great things to say about Harrell. SGA, a tremendous rookie year. They have a lot of interesting pieces, but I don't think that they make a leap until they get a star. And I think that they are very well positioned. Their cap sheet is very clear, clean moving forward. It seems that Kawhi Leonard could take a hard look at the Clippers. Kevin Durant could take a hard look at the Clippers, you know, when it comes to free agency. But this is a team that, to me, you know, would be best case scenario, you know, that 2015-2016 Hawks team that we were talking about a little while ago, that Budenholzer took to 60 wins. I mean, they might have a tremendously good regular season, but without real go-to players, you know, in the playoffs, it's a team that has a real ceiling, because we've never seen, you know, that starless team really be successful. And I know sometimes people point to that Pistons team that won, but when you look at that, you know, Pistons starting five, I mean, you're talking about Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace. I mean, those are guys who were, you know, real studs, maybe not like a single, you know, supernova transcendent star, but guys who are all, you know, in the, you know, I mean, top five almost maybe at their positions. And this is not that. This is a team that is deep, that is good, that is very interesting, very fun, and a great story for the NBA, and may continue to be. But they are not going to find themselves making a deep run in the playoffs, as far as I can see.
No, I completely agree with that. I could see them sort of slipping in at like a 7 or 6 seed, just because they're playing so good top to bottom. But so far this season, they're definitely overachieving. Doc Rivers has them playing great. They're fifth in the league in defending the three. They're number one in two-point percentage. They're ninth in rebounds per game. They have all the pieces there. They just need one star. I feel like if they can add one star to their current roster without giving much up, maybe sign a Kawhi Leonard in the offseason, then they could take that top three or four leap into the Western Conference standings. I know they're number one right now, but I think that'll taper off as the season goes along. They have all the pieces there, Tobias Harris, Harrell, SAG, it's there. They're just missing, like Jeremy said, that one superstar. Because once the playoffs come, I don't think you can rely on Lou Williams to get you 30 points a night. He's maybe good as like a fourth or fifth option as a sixth man. But the pieces are there. They just need one more big piece to sort of compete with the Golden States, the Memphis Grizzlies right now, the San Antonio Spurs. They just don't have it this year, I think.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a team that, as you guys mentioned, falls back down to earth. I think between the Grizzlies and Clippers, probably one of them misses the playoffs, you know, for either the Rockets or Jazz, or one of those teams that's on the outside looking in. Whichever one of those teams does make it between the Grizzlies and Clippers are probably going to be somewhere between, you know, the 6 and 8 seed range. You know, Doc Rivers has done a tremendous job with the talent he has on this roster. This team plays hard. And they're just really fun to watch. This is actually one of the first times I probably enjoyed watching this Clippers team more than I did Lob City the last 2 years that Lob City was together. They just play hard. They play for each other. Tobias Harris, I think, is an absolute stud. Not a number one option like he is right now, but he could be a solid number two or a number three to somebody. Maybe a Kawhi Leonard, as Charlie just mentioned. You know, and they're having success with Lou Williams shooting 38% from the field and 31% from three. You know, and that's also a bright note that they're arguably one of their best scorers is having a trouble scoring, and they're still winning games. So I think this team does take a step back, but I think this is a great, like an audition, if you will, for the free agent class that is to be. You know, having these guys play this well, the rookie and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I was pretty close, playing this well can only entice guys like Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard, who may be looking to change homes this offseason.
Yeah, I think audition is a great great description of this season because, I mean, you have this, you know, best ever Lakers kind of Clippers, excuse me, combination of players. And when you look at them and you look at, you know, their placement in the league, you know, DeAndre Jordan, you know, at his, you know, peak, at his apex in Lob City, you know, would certainly fall under the heading of, you know, one of the top five centers in the league. Blake Griffin, you would think, was one of the top five power forwards. Chris Paul, one of the top five point guards. I mean, more than that, of course, for Chris Paul. So that collection of talent, you would think, you know, that would be a great team. And of course, they could never get over the hump. And then, as I think Corey was saying, that it stopped being a fun team. You know, you knew that there was a good collection of talent, but it was not a fun team to watch for all the athleticism and all the ability. You know, they did not enjoy playing with each other in the way that this team clearly enjoys playing with each other. But I don't think anybody on that team is also thinking, you know, this is our year. I think that, you know, you have a lot of players who are, you know, out to prove what, you know, kind of player they can be in this league. And in doing so, they are, you know, producing a tremendous amount of success and looking for, you know, a final piece. I think that they need to maybe sort out the center position a little more. You know, they've put a lot of starts in, you know, Marcin Gortat, and a lot of fun in Boban getting out there and doing his thing. But, you know, neither of those guys, I think, are real solutions at the center position. I think that if, you know, they had something of like a Clint Capella, you know, an athletic, you know, kind of rim running guy to go with this up-paced team. Other than that, though, you know, they have a lot to like. Tobias Harris, as has been said, I think has a great future as a really strong number. To have Lou Williams, who is the quintessential energy guy off the bench, who can come in and pour it in, that's hugely important. They have, you know, youth and athleticism in SGA, in Montrezl Harrell, Jerome Robinson, who was our other, you know, first round pick this year. You know, we haven't even touched on him because, you know, as deep and good as this team has been, he's barely been able to get off the bench. So, you know, it's really a lot to like. And I think a lot to be excited about if you're a Clippers fan, however many of those exist.
So would you guys say audition, like for the audition, if you were talking to Kawhi Leonard or another big free agent, would you pitch to them that Doc Rivers is the coach of the future for the Clippers? Or do you think they're going to make a move at some point to sort of bring in a fresh new coach?
He's got a title. He's won a title. I think I would show this season with what he's had without a superstar. And even those Lob City teams, I mean, they were still successful teams, you know, 50-plus win teams, and they won it all with Boston. I think Doc Rivers is a part of the future at this point in time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they took his personnel control away, right?
Yeah. It's Jerry West now, which is awesome.
It's Jerry West now, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I was 99%, but I was like, before I make this point, let's confirm. That's what's super huge. Because if, you know, the last few years of the NBA have taught us anything, it's that this, you know, all-powerful, you know, front man is not a good you know, way to go. I don't think it worked super well for Doc Rivers in LA, that now that he's just focusing on coaching, that's, you know, he was a great coach in Boston. They, you know, got him in order, you know, to do everything for them. But, you know, there's nothing that says that he's a good GM. A GM has all kinds of, you know, responsibilities. Obviously, Tom Thibodeau has not made that role work in Minnesota. I mean, you have to be game planning. You're, you know, figuring out what you did in the last game. You're, you know, looking ahead to what you're doing in the next game. And you're also supposed to be scouting. You're also supposed to be, you know, not just, you know, call other NBA players to figure out trades that you're going to make during the season. That is too much. And for Doc Rivers to be able to just focus on coaching, you know, I think it's good for him. I think it has revitalized him because he's not spread so thin. And to have somebody like Jerry West, who obviously, you know, a basketball lifer like Doc Rivers, you know, respects, admires, is going to, you know, value his input and be able to, you know, see those reins and say, over to just some Mo, I'm letting Jerry West make the personnel decisions for this team. I mean, that's a really impressive and prolific 1-2 punch.
Any last thoughts on the Clippers from you guys?
Keep doing your thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're fun to watch. I hate to say it as a Laker fan, but they've been a lot of fun to watch. I don't know. I think they should just ride this season out. Don't blow it up for any big trades. I think they have a good chance, a good shot at Kawhi Leonard to bring him in. So I just say stay the course, develop the young talent, and see what you can do in the offseason.
Yeah, and it's been rumored a lot that Kawhi's, you know, second option might be the Clippers. But guys, you know, Jeremy, Charlie, great having you on. Corey, always a pleasure. Tell everyone where they can find you guys on Twitter.
Well, you can follow me, JeremyFree3, on Twitter. I'm, you know, certainly live tweeting most NBA evenings during the week. I'll look forward to seeing you guys there.
Yep, and you can follow me, CharliePunderscore2441 on Twitter. I write for the Bucks on the Glass, and I'm very excited to keep this going as the season progresses.
You can follow me on Twitter at KWALHoops. It's 1L, KWAL, Hoops. And, yeah, I tweet sometimes.
Every now and then.
And you can follow OTG at OTG Basketball. You know, these guys have done a great job. Make sure you also check out their work, their podcast, their articles and whatnot. And as always, check out the outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.